friends, and welcome back to another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
It is you indeed. So this week we are talking about a couple of books, one of which came out this year, one of which came out last year, both of which I've been quite keen to read, but for various reasons have not been able to fit into my schedule. So then we thought, why not do an episode about them, which gives us a great excuse to read them. The first one, which Alice can tell us a bit about, is There There by Tommy Orange. Hit me.
Okay, sorry, I was just trying to find, I had a little page up about one of the other books and I've lost it, so I was just filling
it'll come back.
So There There by Tommy Orange. So our friend Kish of Picador fame recommended this book to us ages ago. But, you know, the way things are, like, the proofs pile up, and I never got around to it. So we decided to do it today. There There is, so it's written by Tommy Orange. He's a Native American writer. It's a kind of portrait of 12 different characters, all Native Americans, all with different ages, doing different things, kind of from different walks of life, who are all in one way or another connected to the annual powwow that's happening in
Oakland.
I was about to say, where is it set again? Obviously, Oakland is literally so present. It is ridiculous that I couldn't remember that. Anyway, so it's like the build-up to this powwow. It's not really one chapter per character. It kind of hops around, so it can get a little disorienting. But there is like a little character guide at the beginning, which normally I am really against. With this book, I'm still not sure if it needed it.
I actually listened to this on audiobook, so I did not have the character guide.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That, as far as I remember, is not in the audiobook at all. Because I guess it's something that you flip back to if you need to.
Yeah.
Whereas, oh yeah, no, I... No, no, I didn't have... I'm looking at the paper copy now, and there is a cast of characters which explains who everybody is. Which, yeah, was missing from the audiobook. The audiobook otherwise is so great. I really like this book.
Me too. I really enjoyed it. It reminded me of A Visit from the Goon Squad.
Yes, true.
Like every character kind of connects to everyone else.
Yeah.
One
somehow,
way or
yeah.
Another. Yeah.
Mm. So my one criticism of this book is that it has too many characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, you know, with all the books we're reading today, I feel like every criticism that I make is countered with the question in my head of, am I just racist? Because all the books are not written by, like, white authors. So I was like, am I racist for thinking there are too many characters and I couldn't always tell them apart that well? But the fact that, firstly, there's a cast of characters in the front of the book, I think, lends credence to my theory. But also, I read a really interesting article in the Paris Review by another native writer who was like, there were too many characters and I found it hard telling them apart. So I was like, cool. If even, like, native writers are like, I feel the same way.
But the reason why I think it's hard to tell them apart is because of the kind of sparsity of the writing.
Yeah.
Like, for example, the first chapter is from the perspective of Tony, sorry.
The one with fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yeah. So I was going to say, like, but his voice, even though he's such a distinct character, in that first chapter, his voice is really clear.
Yeah. And then there's another character that sounds just like him,
yeah,
who is not him. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that, for me, is the problem, because their names are all very distinctive.
Yeah.
Like, I think... Well,
Opal Viola Victoria Bearshield.
Yeah, like, you're not going to get that confused with another character in this book. I think the problem is just that there could have been more distinction between the way in which each character was written.
Yeah, true.
And I don't think nipping back to the character guide, like, I forgot it was there, so I didn't nip back at all. And generally, I kind of knew where I was. It was only at the powwow when everyone's together that it became quite hard to
figure
kind
out,
kind of work out who was who and who's doing what. And
there's stuff around, like, who people's parents are, which is part of the plot. And that can be quite confusing as well. But yeah, also it was confusing because the people that you thought sounded the same on paper in the audiobook are voiced by the same people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Then not everybody has a different actor.
I suppose it would be like a massive cast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that aside, I really love this. I thought it was so interesting. Have you ever read a book by a Native American author before?
No.
Me either. I never have. And I hadn't thought about that until I started reading it. The other thing I really liked about this is that it is largely the book that we've just described to you, but it's also very occasionally, like maybe once or twice, like once at the beginning and once halfway through, interspersed with nonfiction about Native people in America.
Which I loved.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like sometimes that doesn't always work. I'm not going to name names, but I have read other books that it feels quite heavy-handed, like almost dropping in research.
Yeah.
But obviously with this, it's super informative and really interesting. And I think adds a lot to the text.
Agree. Yeah, I just feel like I learnt a lot from this book in a very enjoyable way. Like, I didn't feel like I was necessarily being, like, taught stuff, even in the nonfiction bits.
But also, to be honest, I was like, fair play, I am so ignorant.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I'm so fucking ignorant. And, you know, I think we can learn so much from fiction. And obviously, particularly own voices fiction, there isn't enough of it anyway across the board. And, yeah, I can't even name another Native author.
No, me either. Like, I was reading this thing in the Paris Review, and they were, like, citing a couple of other authors, and I was just like, I've never heard of these people.
Apparently, though, it's because the kind of publishing in the UK, we just don't, like, pounce on it with as much enthusiasm as they do in America. Which is a shame.
Yeah.
It's a fucking crying shame, because we get all the, like, nice white American ladies and...
It's true. Which is probably even harder to distinguish between in the characters in this book.
Yeah.
There were characters in this that I loved and I thought were, like, really funny and weird and interesting, and I liked that, I enjoyed being in the company of those characters, but I also liked the way that it was for everybody building towards something.
Yeah.
And then there was unexpected stuff that then happened around that I did not know was on the horizon.
And I always love, with books like this, I love the satisfaction of something which seems somewhat inconsequential, then finding out actually what's going on there, like with the drone.
Yeah.
You know, like, just little moments that thread into bigger moments that actually become intrinsic to the kind of...
Yeah, like the stuff about them, you know. The guys getting, like, having the drug money stolen from them at another powwow, which is then, like... the reason behind various things that then happen later in the book.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really love this. And yeah, it had been kind of on my radar for a while, but I didn't have it. Like, I'd never got approved or anything. And I heard about it, like, every so often, but it wasn't one of those books that, everyone in my world was talking about.
No, not at all.
And I just think it's so good. And now it's out in paperback. And I would really encourage people to read it.
I think... So I compared it to A Visit from the Goon Squad. It doesn't have the same short story feel to it. Like,
no.
You feel that it is interwoven stories building towards something. And I also didn't necessarily feel like everything came together as satisfactorily as I would have liked.
I think part of the problem for me with that is that you don't really know what happens to all the characters
exactly.
At the end.
And even though I could kind of pass why I think the ending is as it is, but it would be a spoiler, so I'm not going to. But I think I can understand why, the logic behind the way that it's written. I just think, as a reading experience, I just wish that it had been, like, tied up a little bit neater, you know, with so many different threads kind of woven throughout. I just wanted a little knot.
Yeah, I agree. And even if that would have been, like, a non-fiction ending somehow, I don't know, something. But yeah, I mean, it's got, like, so I'm holding the paperback at the moment, and it's got, like, blurbs from Marlon James, Margaret Atwood.
Big hitters.
Yeah. Top lads. So, we're not the only people that like it.
So, but yeah, let us go forth, read, let us know what you think.
Yeah, and because, you know, I feel like this podcast in general leans very heavily on the white lady, for better or for worse. And we don't often read books by men at all.
No.
And partly because of that, we read even fewer books by men of colour.
Yeah.
This is possibly the first one we've ever done.
On the podcast, definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like it has kind of slipped under the radar in a way that a book this cool and interesting and doing something so different from most other books that I have read in recent times is doing. I would strongly recommend it, especially now that it's out in paperback.
How many books on average by men do you read a year?
I probably do read more than you.
Yeah.
Also because I will often read random, like, kind of semi-trashy commercial thrillers. And some books I read I don't always put on the record.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Sly devil.
Sly old dog. You know, for various reasons. Mostly because the author is, like, persona non grata on Twitter or something. But, no, I'd say, like, it's probably, like, 80-20 women. But most of those women are white anyway.
That's the thing. I feel like I'm probably, like, 95-5.
Yeah.
In terms of gender. And I think racially is probably the same, which is pretty shameful. And it's something that, you know, I actively try and keep my ear to the ground for books by women of colour that will interest and intrigue me. Whereas I think the books that I read that are written by men, there tends to be a reason why I'm reading it.
Yeah.
You know, I very rarely, if I'm browsing in Waterstones, I very rarely pick up a book by a dude that I don't know to read the back.
Yeah.
It's like an internal bias.
Yeah, I think we're much more likely to read a book by a woman of colour than a man of colour.
Mm-hmm, 100%.
But yeah, this is so cool. And yeah, I loved it. And it felt so interesting. I mean, I don't even feel like I read books about Native people by white people. Like, I was thinking about this on my way here. Like, I haven't even read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, so I barely know any books that feature Native American characters.
I've read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
The most famous Native American character.
Yeah.
Of all, probably, in fiction. But yeah, I have not read that. And yeah, I just feel like it's a group of people that are so different. And like in the book, there's people from loads of different tribes. They're largely in Oakland, but they're also in Oklahoma, a lot of the people in the book. Yeah, it was just so cool reading something that was from the point of view of a Native writer, not just about interesting Native people living their contemporary lives, which are all like very different but kind of similarly linked by things like illness and alcoholism and, you know, I don't know, all of the bad stuff. But yeah, I loved it.
What can you remember what sort of year it's set?
I felt like it was set around now.
Well, I guess because it's like,
because drones
stretches
are
over, yeah, quite a vast period of time, doesn't it?
No, I feel like it's quite,
yeah, because we see Opal as a,
oh,
child.
Yes, of course, yes. That was so cool. Like, yeah. I didn't know about, like, the Native occupation of Alcatraz.
No, that's a great example of, yeah, something that, like, I had absolutely no idea about.
And that's something that you get from the fiction part of the book, not from, yeah, the non-fiction bit. There's just so many little bits in it that I'm like, I didn't know that. That's so cool and interesting. Thank you so much.
Especially, yeah, as, like, I've been to Oakland. Like, and I've been to Alcatraz, I've been to a lot of the places in this book, and that kind of...
That narrative was so
absent,
history, yeah.
Completely absent from those visits. I mean, maybe it was there and I just didn't notice or didn't...
Yeah, it wasn't...
I don't read the things, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when I'm in a museum, I don't read the things. I'm just really dumb. I like to just look at the pictures and...
Yeah.
You know.
See the cells.
Yeah, live my life, my rich internal life, and imagine...
but yeah, so that was 1976, I think, but most of the book happens, like, now. But yeah, it even goes all the way back to the 70s. So yeah, very strongly recommend this book.
Good shit. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, yep. Just a really contemporary, fresh-feeling novel that doesn't feel like all of the other contemporary, fresh novels that I have read in the recent past. So the other book that we read that I was sent a proof and a finished copy of last year and didn't get around to reading because they were both physically large, not thick, but, like, big, was America Is Not the Heart by Elaine Castillo, which is a novel about Philippine immigrants to the US. That's kind of broadly what it's about. Alice, tell me about your experience with this book.
So, I've said, it has been on record before that I've said that I'm very good at choosing books for myself. Like, I know what I like, I know what themes I'm looking for, and therefore it's very rare for me to not love something that I've chosen. I was incredibly confident that I would love America Is Not the Heart. I also was sent copies back when it came out, which were massive, and I've only got little hands, I read on my commute, so it was one that I was saving for a holiday. I never go on holiday, so I didn't get around to reading it. And unfortunately, even though it's received nothing but raves, and this is the thing I was fiddling around with looking for earlier on my phone, like the New York Post, Kirkus, New York Public Library, NPR, the Boston Globe, San Francisco Chronicle, all Lit Hub, all absolutely raved about it. I really struggled with how dense and how literary it is.
Yeah. So I love this book, and I have one very basic criticism of this book, which is not that it's too long, it's that it has too many words.
It has a lot of words.
It just has too many words, and they are not all needed. It's so detailed in, like, the minutiae of, like, what someone is doing in the kitchen, how someone is carrying something. That isn't really... I think it could have been, like, 30% shorter and would have still carried all of the stuff that I loved about this book. That's my review.
Give us it in a nutshell.
So, in a nutshell, the plot of America is Not the Heart. It begins with a young woman called Paz. I'm not sure how you would pronounce that, but who comes over to America from the Philippines and then kind of goes back and then returns again with a husband. And you think the book is going to be about her, and then 90% of the book is not her story. It is the story of her niece, who is called Hero, which is short for Jeronima. And Hero's relationship with Paz's family, particularly Paz's daughter, who is Hero's cousin, who is 7 years old. And because Hero can't work legally in America while she's staying with her aunt and uncle and cousin, her job becomes to take care of this kid. And it has this enormous cast of characters, some of whom are kind of important, some of whom are not very important. But yeah, it spans not a particularly large amount of time once it gets going into the main story, which is about Hero. But yeah, I really loved it. It's very geographically specific. It is also set near Oakland. It's also set in the Bay Area, which is another interesting little link between these two books. It's set over the course of about a year or a year and 2 years. It has so much good stuff in it. Like, I learned so much about the Philippines. I learned so much about, like, what the main character has been through in the kind of communist insurrection in the Philippines. So she has come to America after being in a camp in a prison camp for 2 years where she was tortured. Yeah. Just loads of stuff. Loads of stuff happens in this book that I didn't know about, and I loved it. I think the writing is amazing, but there is just kind of too much of it.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, some people really love incredibly long, incredibly dense books, and love kind of wallowing in the minutiae of every situation. And sometimes that is just the ticket. For me, I found it distracting. I found it hard to concentrate.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, that, you know, maybe at a different period in my life, this will really, like, hit the mark the way that I expected it would. At the moment, it just didn't quite do it for me.
Yeah, and you were under time pressure as well.
I think that was the problem, because I had to read it very quickly for various reasons that I won't bother going into. And the pressure of reading something this dense, and that when you spend an hour with it and you've only got through, like, 30 pages, is stressful.
Yeah.
So I think I ended up making it quite a stressful reading experience for myself.
I liked it. The longer that I was reading it, the more I liked it, but the more I was firm in my belief that it didn't need to have as many words in it as it did. I think Hero is such a, like, cool, interesting, and complex main character. There is very... cool, like, love interest stuff. There are some sex scenes that are just so unbelievably realistic and lifelike feeling. And yes, the author, Elaine Castillo, kind of, as much as it's a very specific novel about a very small area, which is a town called Milpitas in California, and the Filipino people that live there and the kind of few places that they pinball between in that town, there are things in it that they feel so kind of universal and beautiful, and there's so much to love about this. But yeah, I get why it didn't grab you at first.
I think that's the problem, really. I think going into books, I want to feel like I'm skateboarding down a hill.
Yeah, you know? And particularly because
I want to be carried so quickly that I will make it to the end no matter what.
Yeah. I think it doesn't help that this begins with another character who is in it throughout the book but isn't the main character. Because when I first started reading this, this is the second time I've tried to read this book. I started it like several months ago and didn't make it much past the end of the beginning bit when it's not about Hero. I think she'd barely been in it by the time I stopped reading it and had to read something else. But yeah. And there's like there's things that happen in like the first bit, which is about Path, there are like characters in that that are barely in it. And you think I think what I discovered the more that I read it was that the more I read it, the better able I was to figure out what I didn't need to pay intense attention to.
Yeah.
I think it felt quite laborious in the beginning because I thought everything was incredibly important, and because I didn't know anything about the Philippines and I didn't know who was related to who, I didn't know the significance of anything, I didn't know like what names were for what gender and things, you know, I had to really concentrate on everything, and that felt quite like a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, the more I read it, the more I was like, cool. I get her style of writing. I get what I can tune out of.
Found your sea legs with it.
Exactly. For all I think it has too many words, I would really recommend this. It's super interesting. She is a great writer. It just is a style of writing that I would personally never do myself.
That's the thing. Like, I had a nice time.
Yeah,
you know, like
there's nothing objectionable in it.
Yeah, like,
and she's not a bad writer.
I'm trying to think of like something that I could compare emotionally to, like other books that, you know what it made me think of? The way people talk about the Nazgard.
Oh yeah,
you
okay.
Know? Like
yeah.
His like 20.
Yeah, I've read a bit of that. Yeah, is his first one called My Struggle?
Yeah,
yeah. I've read quite a bit of that, but I've never finished it.
I remember reading someone complaining about that book, saying that like, if a woman wrote something like this with, you know, 5 pages detailing the cooking of pasta, she would be called a diarist and the book would be slated. And because it's a man doing it, you know,
it's high literature.
Yeah. Oh. And that's kind of what this made me feel like, with America Is Not the Heart, that level of detail, that density, that kind of ponderousness makes me think of like high literature.
Yeah.
Like super literary. And, you know, it's just not for everyone. In the same way that, like, I can read sci-fi and really struggle with it, but I still recognise, you know, good writing. It's just not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me right now.
Yes.
The year of 2019.
But so I loved the sex scenes in this. I loved the romance in this, which comes quite late in the book. But I love the dialogue. I think she is an amazing writer of dialogue, especially the 7 or 8 year old girl in it. See her.
I love the moments with Hero and Roni.
Yeah.
Like, I loved their, like,
interactions. Yeah.
Because those are scenes that are embedded in action.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's kind of what I'm here for. I want to feel like everything is moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I really loved learning about, like, her time in this kind of communist army, like, unofficial army in the Philippines as a doctor before she gets, like, captured and tortured for a year or 2 years. That was so interesting. And the way that the kind of past and present blends with this book, I think once you've got into it, I loved that, and I loved, like, finding out about what, from Hero's past, made her the kind of quiet, uncertain person that she is now. But yeah, I think, as much as I'm like, it's too long, I really think a lot of the people that listen to this podcast would like this book. But just go in knowing that, like, it isn't the easiest read. That's my take.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So yeah. Cool books set in Oakland.
And then, so I just pulled from my shelf, because I was thinking about, while America's Not the Heart is about immigration, I was trying to think of anything else that I've read that covers the same kind of topic. And I pulled Sour Heart by Jenny Zhang off my shelves as another book that kind of shows America through a completely different lens. Have you read Sour Heart?
I have not. I have it on audiobook, as I do with many things, but I haven't listened to it.
What a treat.
Yeah, you know I love an audiobook.
So it's a short story collection about, essentially about Chinese immigrants to the US. The same characters, the same family come up in, I think, 3 stories, if I remember correctly. And then some of them just exist purely in isolation. And I just really love this collection. And I think it kind of sums up what my taste is to a T. Like, still looking at, like, micro moments. Like, it doesn't have to be all bells and whistles and fireworks. But quite kind of careful with language. Quite economical. Characters that feel incredibly real. And everything that they do kind of sings from the page. It's a top read and I just can't recommend it enough.
Cool. And, you know, as we've discussed in a previous episode, I would like to do more short stories. So I feel like I should start listening to this on my audiobook. Because, like, loads of people that I know whose taste I like really like Sour Heart. I feel like I'm going to enjoy it when I get there. Is that set on the West Coast as well?
No, that's East Coast. It's New York. And it has, like, a lot of it is set in the 90s. It has a lot of teenage girl characters. It has, like, a very cool vibe to it.
Cool.
I just love it. I absolutely love it. I'm excited to see that. I mean, that came out a couple of years ago now, so I'm excited to see if she has anything else brewing.
On the horizon.
Anything else up her sleeve.
The other thing I thought was quite interesting about America Is Not the Heart is that that's set in the early 90s, and I can't figure out exactly why it's set then, but it probably does have something to do with, like, things that happen in the Philippines to, like, anchor it, or, like, to give certain amounts of distance between things happening. So, yeah, a cool 90s book. Love a cool 90s book.
Me too. And I love books about girlhood. I just do. Yeah. Teenagers.
Yeah. I think that was another thing that I liked about America Is Not the Heart is, like, it was such a kind of atypical person. Like, I don't really read books from the point of view of someone who has been in, like, a communist army resistance group. And then that book also being about somebody living in America. Like, it's really different. As much as, like, Elaine Castillo is, like, a cool young woman, it's really a different book to most of the books that I read. I would strongly recommend this.
Going I think in it's with, important yeah. as well. It is important to dip your toes into literature that you wouldn't normally pick up.
Okay.
Like, if it wasn't for the podcast, I would not have got around to reading There. I just know I wouldn't have done, because it's a book by a dude, and I just don't really read books by dudes. I just will never prioritise them unless there's, like, a really compelling reason to. I think reading books that are not something you would necessarily be drawn to, you know, it can teach you so much more about the world. It can teach you more about writing. It's great to see, like, different voices rising up. I've also never read a book by a Filipino woman. And I think that kind of broadening of your horizons is super important. I also, however, don't think that reading should ever feel like a chore. And it's good to know when to call time on something.
Yeah.
Because it will always be there for you later.
Yeah.
Like, because full disclosure, I didn't finish America Is Not the Heart. I ran out of time. And I'm probably not going to finish it now that we've recorded the episode right now.
Yeah.
But I probably won't get rid of my copy either.
Yeah.
You know, I may come back to it later on and be glad that I didn't just whiz through it, skimming it and not getting the best from it.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a book designed to be skim read.
Not at all. No. There are bits that you can, you know, when you're reading each page, you can kind of figure out what are the bits you need to really read, but it isn't a skim reading book. There's something that I really liked about both of the books, and I think this is part of the, like, hashtag own voices conversation, is that in both America Is Not the Heart and They're There by Tommy Orange, which we've already discussed on this episode, I think what I really valued was finding out, like, how different... I know it's, like, a really ignorant, like, white person thing to not know, but just how many languages there are in the Philippines, and, like, how many tribes there are in, like, Native American people are so different from each other.
Yeah.
And, like, there's kind of I thought that the Philippines had like one language and it was called Tagalog, and then you find out like in this book that the main characters don't really speak that language, and they speak a language that is kind of more indigenous, which is called Ilocano, and that separates them from other people in the Philippines. Like, maybe Tagalog is more spoken in Manila, and like that's so cool, like finding out from people's actual experiences, like all of the stuff that I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than having like if I wrote this book, I could probably have a Filipino character, but it would include like 2% of the things that are interesting about the Philippines.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's whenever I read, you know, white authors freaking out about diversity, I just think this isn't actually about you.
Yeah.
Like, we're not interested in, you know, white authors just kind of writing books for the sake of it that involve, for example, Filipino characters, because you're not going to get it right. Like, what we want to see is Filipino authors being translated and rising up the ranks of the bestsellers list.
And telling the stories that are actually interesting. Because, yeah, you just couldn't... This book is so dense. Like, you know, obviously I say it's got too many words. But it's so dense that there are so many individual stories in this. And each of those have so many, like, nuances and things that I didn't know. And I think things that, like, most people that read this book are going to learn, like, so much from it about Filipino food and language and customs around birth and death and birthdays and things like that. And that's just a more interesting book. And I think, like, when we have these conversations about, like, own voices and writing what you know and specifically not writing what you don't know, I think that is almost what we're asking for, is the most interesting books possible. Rather than saying, like, no, you can't write that, it's like asking why there isn't somebody writing that from their own point of view, and saying that, like, that book is probably going to be more interesting.
Yeah, and that's not to say that, you know, white authors get a free pass to just write books that are purely populated by white people. That is not what I'm saying. But yeah, I think it's, hopefully this is, you know, the first but not the last book by a Filipino woman that will grace my shelves.
Agree. Because the title, America is Not the Heart, is a reference to a book called America is in the Heart, which is by a Filipino author. I think it was written in about 1946. And he's called Carlos Bulosan. Who I'd never heard of until I picked up this book. And I didn't know until I started reading this book that the title was a reference to another book.
I learned that this morning when I was doing some research on it.
Isn't it interesting? Like, and I'm sure until we started reading these books, we hadn't really thought about the fact that, like, we'd never read books by a Native American person or a Filipino, like, a person of Filipino origin.
Yeah.
Make
you think, man.
We've done a lot of thinking this episode. We've done a lot of learning, a lot of thinking.
Delighted.
And I've done a lot of reading.
You've done more reading than I have.
I did it, though. I smashed it. I got it done.
A shameful performance from this side of the table.
No, but I think, you know, as one of our very popular early episodes of the pod was talking about reading habits. So I think the fact that, like, there sometimes are books that even reading for the pod, you just can't quite finish. I think that's interesting.
I think also, though, to be honest, I would feel quite fraudulent if I sat here and pretended that I loved this book and finished it.
Yeah.
Because I think quite often you kind of come across people will say, I don't know if it's just me, but I think, you know, a lot of readers who maybe are still trying to figure out their taste will struggle to find books they love because they can't isolate what it is that they don't love.
Yeah. I felt so sad because one of my colleagues said to me, like, I'm reading this book and I think, like, I've discovered that I'm really dumb because I'm finding this book really difficult. And I was like, what's the book? And she was like, it's Milkman by Anna Burns. And I was like, yeah, I know. I was like, no.
Famously really difficult.
Yeah, I said to her, like, don't worry. Like, this book is, it is challenging. Like, it's written in a really challenging style. But obviously it's, like, won the Booker. So she probably feels, like, my colleague probably feels like this is a book she should read or, like, should be able to read. And, you know, even the smartest among us may not read and enjoy this book.
So the other day I was at my mom's house and I have basically got this, like many people, like kind of, what's it called when something's like frozen in time?
Time capsule.
Yeah, my bedroom there is like a time capsule from my mid-20s when I moved back home after doing an MA. And I just started working at Waterstones, so I got this like massive discount on books, but didn't really know exactly what I wanted to read yet. And it's so weird that I was just going through these books and clearing them out. And there were so many books that I don't know why the fuck I picked them up. Like, looking at them now, I was like, dude, you were never gonna like that. You were never gonna read that. And then loads of books that I remember buying and fucking loving, but feeling like a bit of resistance as well. Like, oh God, I don't know if I should really be reading like so many thrillers. I should really be reading so much YA. And kind of having this very strange relationship with what I should be reading versus what I wanted to read. And I'm really glad that I managed to find my footing in the kind of world of literature. And I know exactly what I want to be reading. And I know what I should be reading as well. And for me, like, in terms of style and genre, I don't think there's any shoulds whatsoever. I think as readers, we do have a responsibility to read widely in terms of the authors.
Hoopsed
we're reading. I need to be reading more women of colour. Yeah. Those books are out there. I need to do more research. I need to be more proactive in making sure that I'm finding the shit that I want to be reading, because no one's going to do that for me.
Yeah, it's true. And we're in a really good position. Like, we get sent interesting stuff all the time. Like, I was sent, because I support, oh my God, what are they called?
Hoomst.
The publisher that did A Trib.
Influx.
Oh my God, I was like, what's that word? Like, I knew it was like, I knew it had an X in it. Because I support Influx, they send me books. I support them through their Patreon.
Me too. I'm a patron of Influx.
Indeed. So I got this one recently. Maybe you also got it. The one about the Sri Lankan architect.
Yeah, Plastic.
Yeah, by Shiromi Pinto. Plastic something by Shiromi Pinto. I know that that's the name of the author. Plastic Emotions, that's what it's called. Yeah. And like, that sounds so cool. And having literally been in Sri Lanka only this year, I feel like I'm now very well inclined to read that. And that book is out there. And we are lucky to know about it, because I'm sure a lot of people may not hear about, like, cool, interesting books by and about women of colour from an indie press.
That's the thing, man, because, like, indie presses have... They don't have the budget. They're not doing the fucking rounds. Like, we're lucky to even be sent proofs, because all that shit costs money.
Mm.
So, yeah, please, give it a little Google, look up Plastic Emotions.
And the new Mina Kandasamy, we've been sent that.
Yes!
Like,
I'm so excited
we're
to
that. We're so very lucky. So yeah, you know, maybe this is us going on the record, making a commitment to, like, seek out versions of books that we like already, but just not by the same old, same old.
Because that's a frustrating thing. Like, I'd say two of the things I love the most that are long-form fiction is books about teenagers in the hot long summer, you know, discovering their passions and their sexuality, and then something terrible happens that makes their friendship fall apart.
Mm.
That.
Yep.
And then I love a good female-led non-procedural thriller.
Yeah.
Like a good psychological thriller. Both areas which are very dominated by white women.
Yeah.
And you know, whenever a thriller comes up by a woman of colour, we're on it.
Like Darling by Rachel Edwards, which we love.
Yeah. Or like My Sister the Serial Killer by Braithwaite. Fucking banged. And then also, yeah, like the millennial young woman who is messy and finding herself genre, of which there have been many, many books over the last few years. And it's like Evening Primrose.
Yeah, which I loved.
And I'm trying to think if there was any others by women of colour that fit that.
I love Evening Primrose. This came out like 2 years ago.
That banged.
Look that one up if you didn't listen to us then and didn't hear my recommendation at the time.
We did it on the pod, didn't we?
Yeah. Or I talked about it somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. But like, those are the kinds of books I want to read. And, you know, hopefully we're going to start seeing more diversity in those, not quite genres, but, you know.
Yeah, I feel
flavors.
Like...
flavours.
I feel like we have, you know, we have, like, got this out of our system. We have said what we want to say about our reading predilections. And, yeah, I feel a renewed energy for seeking out things that we're going to like that aren't written by people that are just like us.
What are you reading at the moment?
Do you know what? I'm actually... okay. I'm reading something.
Is it spicy?
It's spicy.
She's got that
Oh,
lip.
No, it's not. It's not like I shouldn't be reading it. It's because I'm doing some sensitivity reading.
Oh.
For an author that I love a lot, whose book I really loved last year. But yeah, I shouldn't go on the record and say
no,
yeah what it
tell
is.
Tell me in the pub.
I'll tell you in the pub. So I'm currently reading that. I'm yeah, I said I'd do this for her, and I'm, it, you know, obviously it's kind of work, but also it's an extreme joy to be able to read this novel so early in its life. Yeah, okay, very hashtag blessed.
Very spicy.
What are you reading?
I am reading Goodbye Vitamin.
What is this?
It's by Rachel Kong.
Oh, yes, with the banana on the cover, yeah. Yes.
Had the banana.
I know we shouldn't judge books by their covers, but I do think that if you have a very memorable cover, you are doing something right.
I like, love to judge books yeah. by their covers. Like, it's a whole industry. I'm damn well going to judge it.
Yeah. The banana book. I know
I'm
the
like
banana book.
I'm really enjoying this. So I didn't, when it came out, I just missed it. Like, I remember, I was bookselling at the time, so I was aware of it. I didn't realise that it was the exact kind of thing I like to read. It's like a millennial moves home because her father has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and it's written, it's a diary form, and I'm loving it. I think it's great.
And didn't you abandon something? Like, you did you finish the last book you read that wasn't America's Not the Heart?
Tell
our good friends at home.
Okay. All right, well, I put this on. I decided my Instagram stories is a good place for me to be spicy about books.
Okay.
Because I don't like putting stuff on the record that authors might see. Because, you know, even though I'm fucking, you know, Jimmy Nobody, it still is just like a shitty thing to happen. So, you know, on my Instagram stories is where, aside from showing constant images and footage of my friend Emily in Animal Ears, I yep. also throw out my spicy opinions. It's called The Nowhere Girls by Amy Reid. It's a YA set in a high school. It's three misfits who share a lunch table, become incensed by misogyny in their school, and decide to form a secret society called the Nowhere Girls, where they anonymously encourage their fellow female students to rise up against misogyny in their school. And it was a bit kind of cheesily written, and although there was a lot of like good politics in it, which I'm 100% behind, it just felt so fucking patronizing. It's written in a way that I just felt, it felt like an adult trying to write something to educate kids in a way that just didn't work for me at all.
Yeah.
There's also an autistic character in it, which I have a question mark over how our autistic like pals would think about that representation, because I wasn't convinced it was
yeah.
good. And then also the biggest crime is that what they actually do is write a manifesto saying they're going to withdraw sex from their male classmates as like punishment for actual sexual assaults that have been happening.
We know that this is just neoliberal white lady bullshit.
Exactly. I just hated it. I really hated it. It just felt so unrealistic, and it felt like such a kind of adult idea
yeah.
being played out with
yeah.
these like marionette characters. I hated it. And as soon as I got to that point, I didn't read any further. I was like,
DNF, bitch.
I do not have time for this. So I fucked it up.
Well, I'm sorry that I made you go on the record, but I feel like it was good for you to get this out of your system.
I think it's like with good reason
yeah.
that I didn't like it. And when I posted my little spicy story, I had people popping up in my direct messages agreeing and saying that they felt the same way. So I don't feel that guilty.
Yeah, legit. But yeah, no, apart from my Word document that I'm reading on my phone, which is not a way I would recommend reading a book you're very excited about. I'm also listening to, I've decided John Ronson is actually good now.
Because what are you listening to?
I'm listening to The Psychopath Test, which I'm
okay.
sure, I feel like possibly has some like stigmatizing of mental illness that has not aged well, but is really interesting. But yeah, I was very anti-John Ronson for a long time because I fundamentally disagree with his whole "so you've been publicly shamed" thesis.
He's a bit of a nose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then since he got embroiled in this beef with Graham Linehan, who is one of the people that I hate the most on God's
yeah.
green earth, I've decided John Ronson is good, and I'm listening to one of his books on audiobook, and I'm enjoying it a lot.
Please, I'm also listening to audiobook. But it's not what I recommend. I'm listening to The Stranger Beside Me by Anne Rule.
Oh, cool. They're trying to push that on me when I go on Audible and I'm, like, shopping for stuff that I might be interested in. Because I always have a hard time spending my Audible credits, even though I know that I can return them and get a new book very easily. I have a hard
Fear
time figuring
it.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're always trying to make me download.
I mean, it's really interesting. I do like true crime, but
So this is a book about Ted Bundy, from
yeah.
written by Ted Bundy's wife.
No. They weren't. No. She just knew him. They were friends.
Oh, okay.
And she, as a journalist, she wrote to him in prison, and like they kept contact throughout the whole trial. She is a great writer. It's really well written. I only read true crime written by women, and I'm really, really particular about what I read. I don't know if this one is definitely not too lurid, but at the same time, man, 19 hours of listening to a woman talk about Ted Bundy is a lot.
Yeah.
And I tend to only really listen to my audiobooks when I'm doing housework. And if it's a good audiobook, then I end up getting more done. And this one is, you know, my house is looking pretty dusty.
It's been a low productivity audiobook.
But, you know, I'll get through it.
Because here on the pod, we believe that listening to a book on audiobook is reading the book.
Yeah.
We're not snobs. Yeah, we believe that cooking from recipe books is also cooking.
Yeah, I don't even understand why these things would be, you know, whatever. It's for those debates are for people who I do not feel I would enjoy having dinner with.
Indeed. So, yeah. I feel like we've covered books and many opinions, many takes.
Another
we've gone many places.
Episode successfully smashed.
Indeed. Well, we will see.
Oh, we have something to say.
I know. I was like,
yeah, we do.
We actually have a parting message.
We're doing a live show. We are really jazzed about it. It is on July the 16th at Foyle's Charing Cross. You can buy tickets on their website, and your ticket includes a copy of the book that we are there to discuss.
Which is?
It's called Water Shower Refuse Them by Lucy McKnight Hardy. She will be there too.
It's not just me and Alice.
It's not just us. We're going to be interviewing her. We're going to be talking about the book. It's going to be an absolute laugh riot. Please come along. And we'll see you there.
Because you won't just get me and Alice, you'll get an actual author and a copy of the book.
Yeah.
Like, literally, what more could you want?
I literally cannot wait.
This is our first live event. Like, this is a high stakes thing. So please, the more friendly faces that turn up, the better. And we know that anybody that listens to an episode right to the end will be a friendly face. So please.
That's so true.
See you next
time. Bye.